WDEE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Santa Ana winds are back in Los Angeles County with red flag warnings posted. Crews are still battling last week's wildfires, now blamed for at least 24 deaths. L.A. District Attorney Nathan Hochman announcing charges against a group of people he said arrested for looting and other crimes.
These are the people who are seeking to exploit this tragedy for their own benefit. These are people who have engaged in looting. Arson.
A dusk to dawn curfew remains in effect. Preparations are underway for next week's inauguration of President-elect Trump. Authorities say there is heightened threat environment, but no credible threats. A Gaza ceasefire and hostage release deal could be closer than ever between Israel and Hamas. The Biden administration says talks are progressing. In South Africa, at least 100 men mining illegally in an abandoned gold mine have died of suspected starvation and dehydration. The men were trapped deep underground for months. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
4 WRCE 107.7 FM News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
The enrollment period for affordable health care coverage is open. Melissa Kay reports.
Wisconsinites statewide can sign up for health insurance now through January 15th. The open enrollment period began on November 1st and extends through January 15th, 2025. More than 250,000 people in Wisconsin signed up for health insurance during the last open enrollment period. Signed into law in 2010, the Affordable Care Act ensures people can access health insurance without lifetime limits and protects the coverage of people who have pre-existing conditions. Another key provision of the ACA, authored by Senator Baldwin, allows young people to stay on their parents' insurance until the age of 26.
A new recycling practice may explain why the amount of collected materials dropped by nearly 7,000 tons between 2013 and 2022 in Wisconsin. Wisconsin Policy Forum Senior Research Associate Tyler Burns says it's called lightweighting. Companies have shifted to using less materials to package their products, which leads to less waste in the system. Burns says a plastic water bottle today weighs nearly 40% less than one from 10 years ago. Kohl's is planning to close 27 underperforming stores in 15 states by April as the struggling department store chain aims to boost profitability and improve sagging sales. The announcement Friday comes as the Menominee Falls, Wisconsin-based chain has had 11 consecutive quarters of sales declines. The stores identified for closure include 10 in California, but represent a fraction of Kohl's locations. Kohl's is getting a new leader this week. Michael CEO Ashley Buchanan will take over the chain's top job. Traditional department stores have struggled to retain customers as consumers shop online and look for bargains.
For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
The Packers surrender to the Eagles. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers losing to the Eagles in Philadelphia 22-10. Keyshawn Nixon fumbling the opening kickoff. Jordan Love threw three interceptions. I asked Packers safety Xavier McKinney how he thought the defense played.
I thought we played well defensively. We just didn't get turnovers. So they had, four? Four. So, I mean, it's going to be tough when it's like that, the ratio is like that. So, yeah.
The Eagles star receiver, A.J. Brown, caught on camera reading a book on the sidelines during the game.
That's a book that I bring every single game. And, you know, my teammates call it The Recipe. You know, that's the first time I heard that y'all got me on camera. It got a lot of points in there, a lot of mental parts about it. But for me, you know, this game is mental.
NBA, the Bucks losing to the Knicks in New York, 140-106. The team returns home. Tomorrow night, they'll host the Kings. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy and cold tonight, lows 0 to 5 below, wind chills to 20 below. Sunny and highs in the mid-teens for tomorrow. Warmer for the rest of the week, mostly sunny and a high in the mid-20s Wednesday, near 40 Thursday and Friday. Currently, we're at 15.
Matt Nair on Air.
It is our 1 year anniversary here on Matt Nair on Air. Thank you, Greg and Calvin, for being on this journey with me. It's been great.
Thanks for having me. I can't speak for Calvin.
I'm always thrilled to be here.
Unbridled.
The enthusiasm
enjoyment.
Brimming over from you, Calvin. I'm overwhelmed. Thank you.
Matt Nair on Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Maggie Dawn.
At 2 o'clock, I address whether the January 6th committee destroyed evidence. You know, that little tidbit that's been flying around the MAGAverse. It ain't true. We discuss.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 2 till 4. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app. This is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you so much for listening to be a part. You can contribute at 855-752-4842. Jess P.S. working hard on the board and the phones. And jazzed as hell, Harvey K., our favorite Delano Democrat, a professor emeritus of democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. It's 5 o'clock on Mondays, and Harvey joins us usually at this time. Harvey, great to see you, man. Thanks for joining us.
Good to see you, and I'm really... Well, I should say excited, but I'd be very happy to respond to Joe's question from the end of the last segment.
Yes.
You know, late in the 4 o'clock hour.
Yes. Fine caller, Joe, talking about the disasters out in California and the response or lack thereof and criticism, certainly by the MAGAs and the Republicans. But she brought up FDR. And Harvey, what's your take?
Well, it's really, what's interesting is FDR, not only Teddy Roosevelt had an interest in the environment conservation, but FDR was very determined to address questions of the environment to begin with, not simply for the sake of the environment itself, but also for the sake of the humanity that lived in the state of New York, where he was governor before he became president of the United States, and then all the more when he became president of the United States. And I'll start by way of an example here in Wisconsin. When FDR was elected, in his first 100 days, they had an amazing program or initiatives to enact programs and laws. And what was created in the first 100 days was something that a lot of Americans were a little suspicious of, but ended up being, in many ways, the most welcome and the most embraced of all the initiatives. And that was the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps. And here in Wisconsin, the CCC was very active in creating parks and also in fighting soil erosion, especially out in western Wisconsin and southwestern Wisconsin. But there's another even bigger example I can give you of what transpired. We all know, well, at least I hope we've all heard of the novel by John Steinbeck, The Grapes of Wrath, which is, of course, the trials and tribulations of the families that suffered the Dust Bowl.
Yeah.
From northern Texas through Oklahoma, I mean, the entire sort of Plain States area, you might say. And when FDR became president, the Dust Bowl was really setting in. And of course, we end up with, in quotes, the Okies heading west to California. Well, in the course of the administration, the first few years, they decided that there was only one thing they could do, and it wasn't simply, you know, to address the needs of the Okies by setting up certain kinds of agricultural camps to try to at least alleviate the troubles that many of them had when they got to California. They decided it was imperative to not allow the Dust Bowl to go unanswered itself. And they created an agency whose name I'm forgetting right now, whose task it was to plant trees, vast windbreaks. Now, why was that necessary? Because we think of the Midwest and the Plain States as having a phenomenal agricultural base in the soil. but it was the case that it, in the plain states, the soil was actually not very deep. And it could, and when you cultivated it, it could easily blow. And the winds of the Dust Bowl did just that. It blew Dust Bowl soil, dust, as far east, in some cases, New York. There were cases where New York City and other cities
wow.
were affected by it.
Yeah.
Not unlike the fires that, that have come out of the Northwest and out of California.
Smelling the smoke here in Wisconsin. Yeah.
Smell, exactly. So they decided the thing to do is you can't end the wind. I mean, that itself is impossible. But they knew that if you could set up these vast forests and windbreaks in parts of the Plain States, it would alleviate the troubles that these farmers would experience in the future. So, I mean, they worked at addressing the very kinds of things that right now Republicans are saying, oh, I mean, forget it, right? I mean, let them take care of themselves. But let's also consider the fact that the question of the growth of population and cities and housing in the environment of the Southwest leaves, I mean, that was a tragedy to have allowed that kind of development. I mean, I'm telling everyone they should have stayed behind in Wisconsin or Oklahoma or anything else, but it is the case there should have been much better planning. Having said that, there has been action. I mean, the Republicans right now are lying about the Democrats. The Democrats may well have failed in the short term, but they're lying about the Democrats as if they're the ones who created the situation.
Right.
It's the big businesses that decided they were going to take advantage of people's desires to move to areas like California. And thus you get that the kinds of concentrations of population that you do. But in any case, yeah, FDR, and by way of the New Deal, and we could have seen such if the Green New Deal proposed by AOC and the senator whose name I'm forgetting right now, was it Markey? In fact, yeah. If the Green New Deal had taken any hold on the congressional imagination, we might well have been able to be in a better position now to address these kinds of things. I mean, we're in, you know, I don't want to make too much of this because we get our own disasters possibly, but right now, as I've said to my sister and some other people around the country, just thank God you're not living in Southern California.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That's Harvey Kaye, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, you bring up an interesting point. And while I don't take the criticism from MAGA and Republicans very seriously, if there's a policy change to be attached, you talked about, you know, planting these trees and the efforts of FDR back during the Dust Bowl days. Well, that's a different policy, right? They had to change farming procedures. There was some changes. Do you see what do you think? Do you have any opinion on what Southern California could have done differently given these circumstances? From the reporting from last week, you know, when everyone's got their taps on, you know, and the pressure's down, it doesn't matter how much water there is or isn't, it's not gonna do anything. When the winds are 100 miles an hour, you know, a hose isn't gonna get it done, Harvey. So, what's your opinion? I'm not sure you're an environmentalist or anything like that, but what's your take on what Southern California and California themselves could potentially do going forward to mitigate these kinds of risks?
Well, I honestly do not know specifically what they can do, because I've actually only been in Southern California a couple of times. Everything I know about Southern California I garnered from television. But no, I'm exaggerating a little bit. But it is the case that, consider this, consider the troubles at the lower, where the Colorado River is flowing south through the states in the Southwest to Mexico, and eventually was supposed to, you know, get out to the ocean. I mean, we've allowed river sources, and literally we've wasted water, and they've exploited water resources in ways that make it very difficult. I want to remind you that it was not long ago, well, at least not long ago since I've been living in Wisconsin, that people in the Southwest wanted us to export water from the Great Lakes to them. Now, that to me is outrageous. Okay, that's outrageous. I mean, it's unbelievable. So what can be done besides setting up pipes from the Great Lakes is start figuring out, I'll be crude about it, start figuring out if Southern California can handle the population it has given the available water resources.
It becomes a mathematical equation. Hell, I saw Chinatown with Jack Nicholson, Harvey. I mean, I know how important water is to California. Folks, that's Harvey.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. You know what? I just saw that film for the first time this past summer in New York.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, but I saw it earlier, but I forgot half of it, and I got reminded.
So it's still a classic, right? Jack Nicholson? Oh, so good.
I'll put it on my list.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I got with a running list here. A lot of movies she hasn't seen yet, so we're going to put out some
assignments. Jess, have you seen Grapes of Wrath, the film version of
the
novel?
Not seen the film. I read the book.
Everybody read the book, man, in high school.
I've got a second edition copy of the book with some of the pages printed out of order.
I did a movie podcast and a political podcast with people in which I was talking about the Grapes of Wrath. So I reread the novel, and I'm convinced all the more now John Steinbeck was America's greatest novelist, and the Grapes of Wrath, I don't think there's a better novel in American literature.
I may have to read it again as an adult, but being forced to read things like that when I was in high school just kind of leaves a...
Well, whenever someone tells you to do something.
I will not do it. The answer is always no. Harvey Kay, he's a professor emeritus of democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, how is democracy holding up these days? And specifically, we've had the sentencing of the president-elect, which is a big fat nothing. So he's a convicted felon with no fine, with no jail time, no probation, no monitor.
No nothing.
No drug testing, you know, no peeing in a bottle.
Oh, that would have been so interesting.
You know, I mean, so what do you think, what's your opinion on how all that is kind of slowly wrapped up?
Well, for some years now, and Trump is like the cherry on top of all this. The political and economic elites have been getting away with, in quotes, murder. They have been getting away with stuff. And ask yourself, you know, the average working person sees this, and what do they think? They think, one, there's no reason to have any trust in the elites.
True.
Which probably was always the case, but then the question is, well, then what are they going to think? Well, if they feel themselves without power, they're going to think, well, I got to talk about this in terms of what do I really have to obey the law? Do I really have to cultivate in my children the idea that you have to obey the law for the sake of your fellow citizens? If indeed we have a president who's a convicted felon, right? Give me a break. That's exactly the situation. But this is not just Trump. I mean, this goes back to the 2008, 2009, 2010 Great Recession when the Obama administration failed to prosecute the bankers.
Declined. Didn't fail. They declined.
Sorry, didn't fail. You're right. Fail. Declined. Absolutely. So, I mean, it's been this ongoing thing for, what is that now? How many years is that? 20 years? I don't know.
Yeah, right.
How far back ought we go, right?
Oh, and further than that, I mean, go back to the FDR days. I know you like to harken back to those days with, you know, Robert Barron's and the whole thing and trust busting. I mean, it is the rich are going to do the rich thing. I guess my question, and maybe we'll have to carry this over to the next segment, is yes, though that is the observation. As a law-abiding citizen of this country, well, generally law-abiding, depends what state I'm in, I find this wholly inadequate. I find it hypocritical, and I find it kind of pointless. I mean, why bother giving someone a conviction if there's no consequence? Hell, you know, I'll go do all the things and get the advantage of my crime and take the conviction if nothing happens to me. Folks, this is the Dom Salvia Show. That's Harvey Kay. Come back with us, 855-752-4842. We'll discuss more of the quote-unquote conviction. Also, apparently, perhaps some of the J6 report. Jack Smith resigned over the weekend. His report on January 6th will be allowed. We might be able to see that as soon as midnight tonight. Come back with us. 855-752-4842.
News from the center, WRCE. The Todd Albaugh Show.
What's worse, fast drivers or slow drivers? Karina listening on WAUK in Milwaukee.
Slow drivers are the worst. They think too slow. They stop in the middle of the highway to think about where they're going. Maybe they need to turn left and right. They changing lines for, oh my God, I can do all day long.
Karina?
Yes.
Can you tell us what you really think?
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Matt Nair on air.
Robotaxis made by Zooks are slated to hit the streets of California later on this year. Rides will initially be free for people who agree to test it out. You go first. Wait,
have you ever wanted to drive in a four-person casket with no driver?
My biggest sticking point about this is the name. Zooks is a cartoon character.
Yeah. Do you think when he's driving, he's going...
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free. You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, joins me this hour. You can do so as well, 855-75-CIVIC. Kind of lamenting this conviction of Donald Trump getting away with it. And whatever benefit he garnered, Harvey, from cutting those checks and posting things incorrectly and the benefit he received from that activity, there's been no consequence to it. And I guess this is kind of an ongoing story, man. It seems like, you know, the history continues to repeat itself with the rich and the powerful and the connected taking advantage of those positions and basically working the rest of us over, living by rules that, you know, not living by the rules that we have to live with. And with your affinity for FDR, can you give me a snapshot into the mindset, perhaps, of what the people, what the citizens were thinking? How did a guy like FDR connect to bring people together? Because I got to tell you, man, I believe these kinds of things would not happen if we felt like we had a sense of urgency, if we have a sense that if we band together, we could make changes. I just feel like back in those days, it seemed a little more unified, at least on the citizen level, not us v them, but certainly concerned about the power of the rich and connected.
You know, I'll tell everyone, this was not a setup question. I didn't know that you were going to ask me that question.
Nor did I, man. It's this radio.
But just before we came on, just before I entered the studio by way of the StreamYard, I decided I was going to post something about the gross inequalities and FDR's view of the imperative of containing the power, at least of the economic elite. And then I'll come back to the question in the more general sense. He said, this is in 1935, he said, social unrest and a deepening sense of unfairness are dangers to our national life, which we must minimize by rigorous methods. People know that vast personal incomes come not only through the effort or ability or luck of those who receive them, but also because of the opportunities for advantage which government itself contributes. Therefore, the duty rests upon the government to restrict such incomes by very high taxes. Now, he called for high taxes on the rich, not only because they needed the taxes to pursue the programs he had in mind. He believed that the gross inequalities in income literally empowered these folks to become economic royalists. And if they become economic royalists, democracy itself is severely threatened. And I do want to say that if people have a look at some of the works I've been pursuing these last many years, one of the things I discovered in writing those is that FDR, in many ways, actually campaigned against the Gilded Age, against this privileged elite. In fact, he was called by many of them a traitor to his class because he came from the elite. But he was determined, he really was, to limit the incomes and wealth of the wealthy for the sake, not only, as I said, of the New Deal, but for the sake of democracy. And whether it was during the 30s, Great Depression, or later during the war years, he sought ways to enact or get Congress to enact laws limiting how much wealth could be accumulated, because he saw that as coming at the expense of working people. Now, I would also add that the FDR administration, all 12 years of it, and this I picked up from other historians as I entered into the work, was probably, despite the vast scale of government activity, the least corrupt administration ever in American history up to that point. Okay. So I mean, FDR's view of corruption was you go after it and you find folks who you can trust to occupy positions in your cabinet who are not out, you know, to fill their own bank accounts, or like in the case of somebody who I won't bother to name, everyone will know. Okay. You don't seek to cut billions from the federal budget in order to enhance your $350 billion bank, you know, of wealth.
Well, if you can't use your money to get yourself some more money, what's the point of the money? Harvey, I'd give it all away for just a little bit more. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Okay, Harvey. So then where did that go wrong? Was it Reagan? At what point did, because it seems like people were buying into it. The guy got elected, right? The tax rates were high. We didn't have quite the disparity we do now. It's seemingly, to my opinion, I think the facts would probably bear that out. And now we see, you see Bezos and you see Elon Musk. You see these folks flexing their wealth, power, man. They're using it. They're using it to shape opinion. They're using it to shape legislation. They're shaping governments. I mean, Musk is over, you know, once he got done with the election here, he starts, you know, poking his nose into Europe, man. This guy continues to go. So at what point do you think we went from this thought of FDR to use these policies to limit the wealth and the corruption that would come from that? Where did that go wrong, man?
Okay, it began, and I hate to speak, once upon a time it was easy to speak of this guy because he was alive and he just passed away recently. It began in the latter half of the Carter years. Carter sought to empower business. He wanted to liberate business from the constraints of the FDR and Lyndon Johnson years. But it was during the Reagan administration when we saw, I mean, throughout the 1970s, the wealthy basically contributed to initiatives that would attack the idea of government itself, calling it big government, attack unions, calling it big unions. I mean, they wanted to reduce the pressure upon themselves to pay the taxes that might be fair. Don't forget it. The highest tax rate ever on the rich was instituted in the Eisenhower years, you know? So anyhow, yes, during the Reagan years. But the point is, it continued. Whether it was a Republican or a Democrat, the practice continued of letting the rich get richer and richer while working people, ever since the early 70s, hardly saw any increase in their incomes and standard of living.
It is. It's terrible. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy, you can stick around for the remainder of the hour. Pew Research, Harvey, from January 9th, 2025. Economic inequality seen as major challenge around the world. Most say rich people's political influence is a big contributing factor. We're going to come back and talk about this with Harvey K. Plus some of your calls, 855-752-4842.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For WRCE 107.7 FM News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
The impact of social media on our children and adolescents is difficult to measure. Our growing concerns about mental health risk. Socialization among teens has changed over the years. Sarah Young is a psychiatrist with Gunderson Health System.
We're certainly seeing that they are far less interested in the same hanging out in person, engaging in the same way that teens used to. A lot of times when they're hanging out together, there's still a lot of phone time that's happening, as opposed to, you know, smartphones when kids had to just hang out and talk to each other. So we certainly have some concerns around the communication impact and the social impact in terms of the intensity of relationships that people are having because they're not getting to know each other in the same way that they previously would have. That said, you can form some really strong relationships online as well. So it's not that they're not forming those social relationships. They just look different and we're not entirely sure what to make of that.
Health professionals agree parents need to be involved.
Ideally, parents are involved straight out of the gate, setting expectations for what that use looks like and what the oversight is going to look like. If that didn't happen, I think it's completely fair for parents to say, okay, we might have mishandled this to start with. Here's how things are going to look moving forward. And we certainly don't want to take a one-size-fits-all approach with that either. If your child is being very responsible in their use of social media, then we don't have to breathe down their neck and read every single message that they send. But it's like any trust situation where that trust is earned, and if that trust is broken, then we need to back things off and re-earn that trust again.
Sarah Young says it is important for youth to understand that social media is an important and effective tool, but not the only tool. It is important to be able to have in-person interactions and communication.
For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Audrey Hepburn is considered one of the greatest movie stars of all time. Ariana Grande is just getting started with her big screen career comparatively, but there are rumors that she might play the iconic classic Hollywood Oscar winner in an upcoming biopic. Nothing has been confirmed, but it sounds like the Wicked actress is really interested in such a role, telling Access Hollywood that she has always been enamored with old Hollywood. Speaking of Grande, Wicked was just released on video on demand, and it's no surprise that one of the biggest movies of 2024 is seeing sales through the roof. The film is now available to stream in the U.S. and Canada. Wicked pulled in $26 million on its first day of digital release, according to Variety, and ended up with $70 million after its first week. The nice thing about watching Wicked at home is you will not have strangers standing up and singing along. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy and cold tonight, lows 0 to 5 below, wind chills to 20 below. Sunny and highs in the mid-teens for tomorrow. Warmer for the rest of the week, mostly sunny and a high in the mid-20s Wednesday, near 40 Thursday and Friday.
Currently, we're at 15.
Earl Ingram.
The Republicans and Donald Trump want to impose tariffs. They say it's going to bring in $2.7 trillion.
That's what they say when they're trying to justify a tax reduction. Those broad tariffs are not good for the average American.
You know, Sandy, I'm not a guy that knows anything about calculus and any of those things, but I do know how to add and subtract. They're adding to the national debt.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Jane Mattner and Greg Bach.
Coming up on this show, our colleague Jimmy Cuska joins us to talk about potential changes within Wisconsin sports. Not everybody's happy. And how much money are we spending already on that Wisconsin Supreme Court race? Don't miss it.
Mattner on air, weekday mornings at 10.
I'm tired of predicting the loser.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. It's a phone line. It's a text line. Tom from Jackson. Jackson. Hi, Dom. Great guest, Harvey K. Yes, he is a great guest. He is Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, the tax rates back from the FDR days, we talk about the wealth and what's changed from then to these days and all that. But even at 91%, I mean, the effective tax rate wasn't that, man. People had deductions and so forth. They weren't really paying that. My understanding is probably more like half of that. The top 1% probably paying more like 40 to 50%.
Well, that's still a hell of a...
Well, yeah, it's a lot more than it is today. And but when do you think there's something to be said about being realistic about that? Yeah, I mean, it's a 90% tax rate, but then you can take off your mortgage interest deduction, your meals and entertainment, you know, your travel to whatever, and next thing you know, you work it all down, and it's not nearly that much. Because if we're talking about really having the impact, I mean, we could have a 40%. 45%, 50% tax rate with a minimal deductions for the super uber wealthy and effectively get the same kind of result, don't you think?
In my head, I'm just, look, the that marginal tax rate, I think, is the way it was referred to.
Well, the marginal tax rate versus the effective tax rate, right? There's a marginal, tax. Right? But yeah, then you dig at all your deductions, and there were a lot more back then.
I would stick to that for people of who are billionaires, and I would basically just say, you know, but take out the deductions. I believe, look. Stephanie Kelton is what they call the sort of queen of modern monetary theory. She argued the number one that we have a deficit myth, she got a bestseller by arguing that. But what's interesting is in her book, she talks about the fact, the fact that government can run deficits up to a certain point doesn't mean that you should not tax the rich, because by not taxing the rich, we've now allowed the billionaires to create what she called, and I have called, the democracy deficit. When you've got people, when you've got billionaires, multi-billionaires, and it sounds so weird to say multi-billionaires, doesn't it?
Right.
People who have more than $1 billion, the way in which they're shaping government is utterly insidious. They're buying. Weren't you blown away and shocked when Musk said, if you signed a petition or something to that effect, he'd give you $1 million?
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah. To get people to register to vote. Yeah, vote your registration drive for $1 million a pop. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it was pretty much, you know, MAGA's come hither kind of thing.
Yep,
okay.
Correct.
No, I mean, seriously speaking, and right now he wants to underwrite the fascist party in Germany.
Right.
And he wants to underwrite, you know, the
essentially
fascist party in England. Yeah, right. And well, he sees the Republicans as just that kind of party, I expect, because that's where he's putting all his eggs right now. I mean, this is just utterly outrageous. I mean, forget, maybe we should go from taxation to confiscation sometimes. I know. You won't be able to have me on anymore if I talk like that.
855-752-4842. Well, they do have, asset forfeiture. So if you get caught driving down the street with a bag of weed and a bag full of $100 bills, that can just take it and assume you're a drug dealer and you gotta go fight to get it back. I mean, that happens to regular
folks.
Wait a minute,
we already just saw
time.
We just saw a felon. Look, we have a present.
Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy, University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. The Republicans over the weekend, or maybe up last Friday, there's still talk of them threatening to basically pay for Donald Trump's extension of his 2017 tax cuts, which will cost us, you know, trillions of dollars, by cutting Medicaid, you know, some of these safety net programs. I mean, it's not only are they flaunting it, Harvey, they're coming after us. They're coming after the folks. And these are, you know, people pay into these things, man. It seems like we're down, and they're trying to kick us when we're down here, Harvey. How do we get people to rise up against this kind of mentality?
Well, you know, what first came to mind when you were going into this question was, to think that back in the 1950s, McCarthy was finally called out. That's Joe McCarthy was finally called out by someone said, "Have you no shame?" I think that was something to that, to that effect. Yep. Well, I mean, clearly speaking, the Democrats, well, they're pretty shameful most of the time these of late, too. But there has to be some way in which Republicans are called out for their shameless behavior, number one. Number two, it isn't just, I mean, clearly we have to concern ourselves. The caller Joe had talked about, aren't we all in this? Aren't we all in this together? Mm-hmm. Well, clearly we're not all in this together. But what we do need to know is that there are solidarities which can make a difference. And right now, we all know that that Trump won, and he didn't win by a landslide or anything else. John Nichols in The Nation has done a good job of reminding us mm-hmm. that he won really by a hair's breadth, you might say. And it also is the case that for example, in AOC's district in New York, the fact is that even as he increased by 11% his vote in her district, she did all the better. So there's obviously a lot of contradictions. Go to Florida. They enacted the 15%, the $15 an hour minimum wage. Go to the other states down there in the plains, like Missouri and others, which now have, and Nebraska, which said, well, no, we're not going to fund religious schools. That kind of stuff. There are vast numbers of working people who are looking to be effectively organized, whether it's in labor unions or in state, you know, in public interest groups. We have got to support these initiatives, and we have got to find ways, and that's the beauty of civic media, that it provides an alternative to the right-wing voices out there, I believe, at least. I mean, that's my take. I mean, beyond that, I'm not sure. I mean, I belonged to a labor union. We lost our collective bargaining rights. It annoys me no end that Scott Walker is on Twitter just yapping away about freedom and other things. My God, he must be looking for a job in the White House or something. Maybe they can give him a waiter's position, you know, something like that.
Give me a coffee,
boy. It really is the case that we've reached an abyss. I thought we reached the abyss a few years ago. It's like we're out on a gangplank right now, and working people know they're being screwed. They have to be offered some kind of vehicle, some kind of way of joining together and changing it. The ambitions of Americans, the aspirations of Americans are reflected in the fact that labor unions, even though they remain weak, are very popular ideas right now, very popular institutions. I mean, if the Democrats are smart, they're going to make every effort to invite labor into their conversations about the future of the DNC and the party, and they're going to turn the Democratic Party back into the party of the working class. That is my view. Other than that, immediately, we're facing, you know, hell and high water. I mean,
well, Harvey, I mean, Donald Trump, I think certainly in the last, this past election and in 2016 as well, capitalized on that. I think he kind of stole some of Bernie Sanders' thunder a bit. Now, he didn't follow through with what he was saying he was going to do, but
yes, he did.
He certainly tapped into that, right? And a lot of folks went. Same thing again in this last election. I think folks are certainly, you know, their instincts are correct. They haven't gotten a raise in a generation. You know, some of these things are right there in front of us. The problem is, who's to blame for it besides us? Then what's the circumstance to change that? And if there's not going to be, if it wasn't Kamala Harris in this time, and maybe, you know, Joe stuck around a little too long and he didn't give Harris or somebody else time to articulate that vision and that message, that it's not, you know, it's not going to be the billionaires.
Kamala Harris had no vision, no message that would have addressed the kinds of things you and I are talking about. Okay. They brought Tim Walz on thinking that would be the way of appealing to working people. What'd they do? They then ran to the center of the political spectrum. No, that's not the way to go about it. By the way, you made a good point. I want to remind everyone, back in 2015 and 16, when Trump was running for president that first time, he was talking, yes, about getting rid of Obamacare, but he said he was going to have a better program. Okay. Now that's interesting.
Well, in 2 weeks, it's always coming in 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks,
man.
Swear, 2 weeks.
I got
the best plan.
By the way, that wasn't a compliment to Trump, other than his slyness.
Yeah, well, and he does. I mean, he picked it up, and people bought it. And I think to some degree, it's the personality, right? I mean, there is some of that, and he's whether you like him or not, he has charmed, for lack of a better term, the MAGAs and what's left of the Republican Party. So I think there needs to be that kind of inspiring leader on the Democratic side, man. And I don't know. I haven't seen it yet, Harvey.
No, I haven't seen it yet either. Okay. I mean, there are people out there who would like to pursue the kinds of things we're talking about, but do they have that kind of, remember the term charisma? I haven't heard that term used in a long time. Yeah. I mean, Donald Trump doesn't have charisma. Okay. He has audacity is what he has, because he can lie and lie and lie and get away with it by portraying it's all going to be better just over the horizon. You watch.
In 2 weeks, Harvey. In 2 weeks. 855.
And by the way, I can't wait to the day next, was it next Monday? The inauguration.
The inauguration.
And then you and I get to talk for an hour about that.
I look forward to it as always, Harvey. 855-752-4842. Let me throw this one out there before we get to the callers and the texters. As mentioned, Pew Research, economic inequality seen as a major challenge around the world. A couple of paragraphs here, Harvey, then I would like your comments. A new Pew Research Center survey of 36 nations finds widespread public concern about economic inequality. And when asked what leads to this inequality, most people across countries surveyed point to the intersection of wealth and politics. A few of the key findings. A median of 54% of adults across the nation surveyed that the gap between the rich and the poor is a, quote, very big problem in their country. 54%. And here's the kicker. Another 30% say it's a moderately big problem. We have 84%. Now, again, this is a survey of 36 nations, so USA just being one of them. But 84% of the people say this is a moderately or a very big problem between the gap between the rich and the poor. It's not like this topic is unknown, Harvey. I mean, it's right there in front of us. Everyone knows about it. Everyone's talking about it. You're talking about it all the time. We talk about it. How is this remaining if that's the concern?
Okay. Both right now, the Democratic Party and the labor movement are in desperate need of each other, but they are also in desperate need. You know, I wish the people we're talking about would pay attention to you and me. What can I say?
We'll keep
they
yelling
are in desperate
louder.
Need. They are in desperate need as well of a vision. They have no historical memory. I could sit here talking about FDR. And when's the last time you heard any political figure not just mention FDR's name, but actually behave in any way reminiscent of FDR? Or for that matter, Lyndon Baines Johnson at his best.
Nobody. Okay? No one in my since I've been paying attention the last, say, 20 years, I haven't heard squat.
Right. Exactly. So do we yell louder? Do you and I go network and say, go to your, you know, open your windows and shout like hell or whatever it was?
I mean,
right. No, we have to keep doing it, and we have to encourage people. But it really does require some kind of leadership. And I mean, I thought we'd see more, in quotes, leadership from labor, and not necessarily, you know, in the case like of O'Brien, you know, O'Brien's his name, right? Who basically gave, you know, a kiss and a hug to Trump at the Republican convention.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had a good line, and then he turned around and he, you know, became a goper.
And then said all the corporate things. Also from Pew, Harvey, a median of 60% believe that rich people having too much political influence contributes a great deal toward economic inequality. I mean, the numbers are there. People know, Harvey. We just got to, I don't know, connect the dots for them.
When we come back from the break, I'm going to give you the quote that will answer it all.
All right. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. That's why you come around, man. We need the one answer for everything. Come back with us, 855-75-CIVIC.
News from the Center, WRCE.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Here's what the WSJ had said after J6. This week has probably finished Donald Trump as a serious political figure. Boy, that hasn't aged well, has
it? No, not at all. In the Wall Street Journal. So after what they just said 4 years ago, Maggie, they couldn't bring it upon themselves to say that guy who did that shouldn't be anywhere near the White House again? Nope, couldn't do it.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
I drew my brother's name 1 year and we went to the mall and I said, hey, while you're in there, grab me a Christmas card. We're doing the gift exchange later. So he walks upstairs, gets the card, hands it to me. I sign it, Merry Christmas. Love, Pete. And that was my gift to him that I made him pick out, pay for, and retrieve. He's like, you are the laziest, cheapest. It was absolutely beautiful.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Out here in the middle of these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. That's how it feels when you're struggling with your mental health. But you don't have to feel alone. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now, 855-752-4842. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Our final segment together. Harvey, you promised me before the break the answer that would solve it all. Professor, please tell us.
In 1936, FDR... was the Democratic Party was clearly going to nominate him anew. And at the Democratic Party convention in Philadelphia, at a gathering held in a stadium, FDR went before the assembled and on radio to the nation and said, referring to those wealthy corporate bosses who were literally trying to take down his presidency. They were spending a lot of money trying to take down his presidency. And there was good evidence that there were conspiracies to try to take out his presidency. Okay. And he said this, and referred to the rich as the economic royalists. These economic royalists complain that we seek to overthrow the institutions of America. What they really complain of is that we seek to take away their power. Our allegiance to American institutions requires the overthrow of this kind of power. And he added, in vain, they seek to hide behind the flag and the Constitution. In their blindness, they forget what the flag and the Constitution stand for. Now, as always, they stand for democracy, not tyranny. For freedom, not subjection, and against a dictatorship by mob rule and the overprivileged alike. As he said, our allegiance to American institutions requires the overthrow of the power of the economic royalists. When would you ever imagine a president of the United States speaking so honestly about a state of affairs? And indeed, when's the last time you ever heard anybody, you know, in politics, at least mainstream politics, talk about that? He also said in that same speech, he said this, which we all have heard at some point, I'm sure. There is a mysterious cycle in human events. To some generations, much is given. of other generations, much is expected. This generation of Americans has a rendezvous with destiny. And I think that's absolutely the case. Okay. We may have blown it, is my fear, this time around. Okay. But so far, we haven't completely lost hold of democracy.
Harvey,
and we better
get
it together.
Could that speech be given today and still mean the same thing?
You bet it could. Absolutely. And he actually then, this is interesting. So this is 1936. 8 years later, in a State of the Union message, 1944 is where he proposed the Economic Bill of Rights, okay, which I don't want to go through them all right now. But at the end of that segment of his State of the Union, where he laid out the Economic Bill of Rights to guarantee health care, to guarantee a job at a living wage, to guarantee education, to guarantee a whole host of basic essentials to survival, he said recreation included. But then he went on to say, effectively, I'll paraphrase, and if we fail to do this, here we are, you know, at the end of the war against fascism, if we fail to do this, we've essentially allowed fascism to rule us. In other words, he believed that the future, if it did not include basic fundamental economic rights, would cost Americans democracy. That's why it is absolutely essential that we not only, yes, overthrow, in his words, the power of the economic royalists, but that we create a more progressive social democratic America. That's FDR. I'm only communicating what FDR said, but I believe that those words.
Harvey K, we got a texter here. Andrew says, if the highest tax bracket is doubled to 72% before deductions, those conservatives will call and claim the billionaires will leave the country. And if so, would that be a problem? You know, are you concerned of the Atlas Shrugged attitude? If the taxes went up, then all those economic royalists will take their ball and their bag of cash and go elsewhere?
There was a case during the FDR years where it's called, Alan Minsky and I and others have talked about this. Let's suppose we had elected a truly progressive new administration. Would the bosses, the corporate elite, would they pursue what's called a capital strike? A capital strike is where they hold, even if they don't leave the country, it has to do with holding back investments, which are essential to the American economy. Well, then that says, yeah, as FDR said, you got to overthrow their power. You have to figure out a way to disable them from controlling that kind of wealth and make it subject to public needs in favor of the public good.
Harvey, there's really one answer for it. You want to hear my answer to it? My overall arching Dominic 2025 answer to it all? It's really simple.
This is the punchline of the day. The punchline of the day.
People need to stop cashing the checks. You know what I mean? Because those people, the billionaire class, their power lies with the checkbook. If you're not buyable, if they can't buy you, what can they do? Don't cash the checks, Harvey. What do you think?
So are you talking about a consumer strike?
Consumers, politicians, wherever it is, wherever the influence comes, wherever pressures there are, stop cashing those checks.
This will make good discussion in the future.
And it
I
will
see
be.
The signals from Jess. I don't want to get in the middle.
We're going to have to put that one off until next Monday. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Always enlightening, always pleasurable. I look forward to speaking
always
to you next
blast.
Monday. Yeah, for sure. Thank you, Harvey. Thank you, Jess P.S., working the board, doing the hard work as well. Thank you to our fair audience for being a part. We'll be back tomorrow, a little overtime with Maggie Dawn. And stick around right now. Pete Schwabba with Nightlights coming up next. Have a great night.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome the author of Building the Bucks, Jordan Tresky, and talk entertainment with Capital Times reporter Victoria Davis. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8. The Todd Alba Show.
Donald J. Trump has been officially certified the winner of the 2024 election the way that the Constitution dictates.
You see how simple that is? There's a vote, you certify the results, democracy moves on. You might not like the results. The person I wanted to have elected didn't win, but that's the way democracy works. Unlike 4 years ago on January 6th, where rioters stormed the Capitol.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Strong erratic winds returning to Southern California tonight. Gusts up to 70 miles per hour are expected. Fire crews are still battling major wildfires burning for the past week. Ron McCord fled the Eaton Fire in Altadena, but like many others, lost everything when flames tore through. He asked ABC's Matt Rivers to show him video of the neighborhood and found out his home was gone.
This house has survived 110 years.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Strong erratic winds returning to Southern California tonight. Gusts up to 70 miles per hour are expected. Fire crews are still battling major wildfires burning for the past week. Ron McCord fled the Eaton Fire in Altadena, but like many others, lost everything when flames tore through. He asked ABC's Matt Rivers to show him video of the neighborhood and found out his home was gone.
This house has survived 110 years.
12,000 structures were destroyed in the